Okay, let's get started. Morning, everyone. My name is David Brazzoni. And we're going to be talking this morning about basically the beginnings of writing your own programs. The language I selected pretty much arbitrarily was Perl. We'll maybe go into why I selected it in a while. First, a little bit of background about myself. I work as a senior software engineer for Level 3 Communications. If any of you don't know who Level 3 Communications is, we're the bandwidth provider to the bandwidth providers. So we're the people who sell these really big, huge, fat pipes to the baby bells and such. I'm mainly a user interface developer for Level 3. We work with Java. I do a lot of work in XML, JavaScript, HTML, servlets, Java server pages, that sort of thing. I've been tinkering with computers since I was about 10 years old. My first computer was the glorious VIC-20 with all of 3.5K of memory. Still remember when I got my 16K expansion card, it was like bolting rockets onto roller skates. And it's just basically continued from there. I've played with Amigas and PCs and other bits and bobs. Before we begin, I'm going to hand out these notes that I put together. I apologize. Some presentations that I came to yesterday had really nice PowerPoint slides. And here I am, the self-proclaimed poster boy for automation and using computers as tools and things. And this is my high-tech solution to my notes, illegibly scrawled in my notebook. As the notes are being handed out, I'd like to take some quick surveys. Who in this room already writes programs of some kind? Wow, so I'm preaching to the choir. Who's a professional developer? Okay. Maybe if a couple of you could talk briefly about why you're here, what you're looking to get out of this panel. Well, it's not really a panel. There's no one else here, but what you're looking to get out of it. And please remember that I'm trying to kill an hour or I'm in the wrong room is an acceptable but fairly frowned upon answer. Is anyone... Yeah, that's the other thing. If anyone wants to speak up, if you could raise your hand and they'll bring a mic round.
I'm still working with Java, JavaScript. I do a lot of web development and things like that. I've done Visual Basic and Java code, visual applications and things like that. I'm just curious about Perl. That's why I'm here.
Okay. It's if you've already done a lot of that stuff, the stuff we talk about today may be easy, but no.
Yeah, I'm a COBOL programmer, and I hear about Perl, so what is it, and what's it used for, things like that. General questions.
Okay.
I work in BIOS development for a computer manufacturer, and do a lot of some BIOS, also user interfaces and various applets and utilities, and I've heard a lot about Perl. Bought books on it, and they sit on my shelf, and I don't touch them, and I've been meaning to learn it, so that's a good way to start.
Okay.
I'm a DBA, and we've got some programs that were written by an outside contractor in Perl that are broken, and I want to be able to at least know where to start.
I did a lot of applications programming with Perl this summer as part of an internship, and I'm a self-proclaimed Perl junkie. Mm-hmm. So I saw it in the title and felt obligated to come.
Okay, well, as I said a while ago, if you know about software development, if you've been using Perl, some of the things we talk about today might be a bit boring. You might already know about them, essentially. I'd try to, when thinking about what I was going to talk about, I was always faced with this task of balancing not getting too technical and, you know, trying to include everyone. If someone walks in and doesn't know anything about it, we're also going to try to help people like that. Okay, let me get started. By the way, if you have any questions at any time during or after the presentation, just stick your hand up. If there's something that's not covered during the presentation, come talk to me afterwards. I can try to help and answer your questions. Basically, what I'm going to be talking about are the very fundamentals during this presentation. I'm a great believer in the fundamentals of programming, whether it be procedural programming or object-oriented programming. Knowing the fundamentals and understanding the fundamentals makes it much easier to go from language to language. It no longer becomes a matter of, well, I'm a C programmer and I don't know Perl, or vice versa. If you understand the fundamentals, it's much easier to work with any language and to just learn the syntax of any language very quickly. Excuse me. So I'm going to start with basically what computers are good at and what are they used for? What do we use them for? Basically, a couple of things. We use computers to do things that are either impossible to do otherwise, or difficult to do. I'm just trying to think of an example of something that's really impossible to do without computers. Certainly there are a lot of things that are very difficult to do without computers. There's a vendor in the large vendor area in the Marriott that sells this really spiffy looking animation program. If you wanted to get into animation and you didn't have this kind of really cool software, it'd be really difficult to start drawing all your own frames. And so computers make it easy. They do the work for us. They do the difficult work for us. And there's maybe two or three things that computers are really good at doing. One of them is repetition. You can sit human beings down and have them do repetitive work, but computers are really good at doing that. You know, don't have to be fed, they don't need to take breaks, they don't get upset. They're also really good at doing repetitive work really quickly, much more quickly than you or I could do. And also much more accurately. That's one of the reasons why I use Perl. I use Perl at work more as a utility language. As I said, I work mainly in Java. But I use it a lot when I have to go through lots of tasks, looking at lots of text, examining it, extracting information from it. Perl scripts are much better at doing that much more accurately and much more quickly than I can. Also, if it's something that I have to repeat more than once, usually it's worth sitting down and automating the process. The other thing, of course, is being lazy. If there's any professional software developers in here, I personally think that programmers are inherently lazy people. I think good programmers should be lazy people. There's certain situations where programmers like to reinvent the wheel because that's the way they like to do it. But generally, it's nice to be able to put things together like Lego blocks and generally do useful things without having to think things through from the very beginning every time. So moving on from that is the idea of automation. And that sort of ties back into letting computers do the work for us, automating tasks. Where I work, and actually just about everywhere I've worked, there's not nearly enough automation. It always puzzles me that we're in the IT field. There's always bright people everywhere around me, know what they're doing, and we have a lot of paper everywhere, and filling out forms and generally doing things in a non-automated way. I'm a big proponent of automation. Unfortunately, we don't always have the time to sit down and do things right, but I think it's a poor excuse to say we don't have time to do things right, so we're going to kludge through it. And so the idea of automation. So what are some other reasons we'd want to write our own programs? Well, as we're going to see today, it's really easy. There's not that many fundamentals to learn. We're going to be talking mainly about Perl scripts and more procedural programming, but even in object-oriented programming, there's some fundamentals that you have to learn and understand, and they're not too difficult. Obviously, moving forward, it's more difficult to understand how to use them well, but the basics are not that difficult. Some other reasons why you'd want to learn how to write your own programs can be a challenge. That's why I love my job. It's challenging, it's different, it's never boring. And it's educational. You get to understand a little bit more about how your computer works, get it to do exactly what you need it to do. And as I said before, the fundamentals that we're going to be talking about today apply to any language. So if you're creating web pages and you want to use JavaScript, or Java, or C, or C++, the basics that we're going to talk about today apply to all those languages. So, why Perl? A couple of reasons. I think when I talked to Scott, who's not here, can't see him, when I talked to Scott over email, I think I was doing a lot of work with XML, and so I was using Perl a lot to sort through it. But a couple of other reasons why Perl. Who in here uses Linux? Okay, a few people. If you use any of the Unix flavors, Linux, Solaris, other Unices, Perl's ubiquitous. I'm going to say the flavors of Unix, because that's generally where it's ubiquitous. If you install Windows, Perl is initially not there. But it's available for Windows. Not only that, it's free on Windows. So, and actually, if you look at the resources section on the sheet that I've handed out, if you have a sheet, I apologize. There was a shortage, I think. One of the resources is ActiveState. And ActiveState is a company that actually provides both free Perl tools and Perl tools that you pay for. Two of the really nice free ones are their Perl interpreter, of course, which you can download and install on Windows. And they also have a really good integrated development environment for Perl and actually a number of other languages. It's called Komodo. It's also free for non-commercial use, so if you want to go take a look at that. It makes writing Perl code on Windows really nice and easy, makes debugging really easy. Any of you that don't know what an integrated development environment is, it's a tool that programmers, application developers use to basically bring all the tools that they're used to using into one place and make their work easier. It's just everything in one place. And as we're going to see in a moment, we're actually going to be referring to this sheet throughout the presentation. It's really easy to get started with Perl. There's a couple of reasons for that we're going to talk about in a second. But basically, you can install Perl, you can install Komodo if you want to make your work easier, and just get started with it really quickly. In fact, let's take a look at the famous or infamous Hello World program in Perl on the sheet. It's a two-line program. And because Perl is interpreted and not compiled, that's it. You create a single text file. You enter those two lines into the text file, and you run it. You're going to see how to run it in a second, but you run it, and that's it. It doesn't do anything terribly interesting, but that's a two-line Perl program. I just mentioned Perl is interpreted. Which means that what happens when you run a Perl program is the first thing that happens is the Perl interpreter is loaded into memory. And the job of the Perl interpreter is to look at the file that you've just created that contains your program, look at it line by line, and do what each line says. And that's basically the difference between interpreted and compiled programs. With an interpreter, generally, once the line is looked at and executed, the interpreter forgets about it. There's some exceptions to this rule. There's some interpreters that optimize things a little bit better. But the general idea behind interpreters is they look at the instructions that you provide the computer, they execute them, and that's it. They forget them. So every time that an instruction is repeated, it has to be looked at again as if for the first time. The fact that it's interpreted makes it easier, though, because you don't have to write source code. You don't have to create all the instructions for the program and then compile them and then, depending on what you're using, link them and discover that you've got a bug in your program and start all over. Just change text, execute it, and you're up and running. Another advantage with regard to Perl is that it is really powerful. As far as where it sits in compared to, say, other languages such as Java, C, C++, Unix shells, I would say probably somewhere in the middle. It's probably a little bit more than some of the shells that are available out there on Unix, even though the shells are just incredibly powerful. And it's arguable, I may get flamed for this, but I would say it's probably a little bit less than the mainstream application languages. What's interesting, though, is that it is actually possible to do just about anything you can do with, say, C, C++, Java in Perl. So it's really interesting. It sort of suffers from a bit of an image problem. I'm as guilty of it as other people. Let's see, what's next? As I said, it can do just about anything. So if you need to write graphical applications, you can do that. There's a toolkit that's available for Perl called Perl TK, and you can write graphical applications both in Windows, on X-Window, and so on. You can write server applications. There's actually some modules available for Perl that basically take all the guesswork and programming out of that for you. So you have the basics of a server application that you can download as a module, use in your program, and Bob's your uncle, there you have a basic web server. It's also cross-platform, essentially. Since you can download it and use it on Windows and Unix and haven't really been keeping up with all the other operating systems, but I suspect that it's available on those as well. We talk a lot about Java being write once, run anywhere, but essentially the same applies to Perl. You can use it anywhere. These are the advantages. A couple of disadvantages. Remember I said that one of the advantages of Perl is it's interpreted. You can get started with it quickly. One of the disadvantages of Perl is it's interpreted. Interpreted languages generally have this image problem of being less high performance and, you know, not as good. But there's probably less opportunity for optimization. It's easy to get started with, but maybe a little bit less optimized. as I said before, it's got a bit of an image problem for many different reasons. But in concluding, I would say it is a perfectly capable language. You can do just about anything you want with it. In terms of writing client-side applications, server-side applications. I find it to be ideal for generally just quick and dirty but effort-saving utilities. That's what I use it for mainly. But you can use it for anything. So on to the basics of procedural programming. I'm going to talk a little bit about what procedural programming is versus object-oriented programming and so on. Basically, what we're trying to do is get the computer to do what we want. That was one of my initial motivations for learning how to program was I was frustrated that I couldn't find things that did what I wanted them to do. So that's basically the goal. You want to be able to get the computer to do exactly what it is that you want to do. I mentioned earlier the importance of the fundamentals. We need to learn the fundamentals. I'll tell a very brief story about my mother. She's diametrically opposed to me. She's a complete technophobe. And successfully computerized her office. And the way she learns computers is she comes to me and she says, I want you to show me how to open a file. And she will write down all the steps for a particular program. And I keep telling her, you have to learn about the concept of opening a file, not how to open a file in Microsoft Word or Excel or anything else. If you learn the concept, it works everywhere. If you just have a cookbook approach to a solution, then you're always stuck. Okay. So we're going to be talking about the fundamentals of procedural programming. I'm going to sort of compare that very briefly to object-oriented programming. Procedural programming essentially involves writing lists of instructions or functionality in procedures, I'm going to say, and then I'm going to try to explain it. You have languages that are inherently procedural, languages like Pascal and C and so on, that basically divide up functionality into functions or procedures. It's a good thing to divide up functionality. You don't want to have, if possible, a 3,000-line file that contains just an interminably long list of instructions to the computer. You want to try to break it up. It's easier to understand. It's easier to go looking for problems. And different languages do it in different ways. Functions or procedures that do specific things. And then in the main program, you can call these functions and procedures depending on what you need to do. So that's procedural programming. There's also object-oriented programming. A lot of you may have heard of that, and that's just basically the idea of trying to model real-world problems and real-world things with software components and software objects. And actually, as it happens, Perl supports both. You can do procedural programming in Perl. You can also do object-oriented programming in Perl. We're not going to cover object-oriented programming in Perl today, but it is possible. In fact, a lot of the modules that you can go out and find and download on the internet are basically Perl objects that you can use. Let's see. Now, object-oriented programming, one final thing about object-oriented programming, I consider it to be a superset of procedural programming. It uses the same fundamentals that you learn in procedural programming. But onwards. So we're going to start talking a little bit about the basic building blocks of programs that are actually used very frequently and in everyday programming. We do object-oriented programming in Java, and our Java programs are full of what we're about to talk about in a second. So, the three fundamentals that we're going to talk about today are variables, loops, and conditional statements. And then hopefully there's enough information and enough resources to point you to on the internet, and you know, if you're interested, you can keep going with it and learn more about it. So the first fundamental is storing data. You get a much better idea of this, again, if you use one of the Unix flavors of operating system, simply because Unixes have a lot of little tools that you run on the command line. You can string them all together, taking the output from one tool, using it as input for the next tool, and just create big, long chains of tools. But basically, there's a need for programs, first of all, to consume data, and second of all, to spit it out. So they're going to take information in, do something with it, and then create some kind of more useful output. Not only that, if you look at the Hello World program, it's a really good example of how easy it is to get started with Perl, but it really doesn't do anything useful. The information that's typically used in programs is dynamic. It changes. It needs to change. If you need to accept input from the user, that's going to be different every time. So there needs to be a place to put that data in the program once the user enters it. So there's data input and data output. And that's the first step, really, in making programs useful. And the way we do this is through variables. Variables are basically boxes, if you will, in memory for information. The name variable indicates it can change. So, when you're writing a program, one of the things obviously you need to do is tell the program, what data am I going to be working with? What data is going to be coming in? And am I going to be manipulating? Excuse me. And there's two stages to that and two terms that are used in telling a program that data is going to be used and putting information into that box in memory. There's variable declaration, which is the step where in the program you're basically telling the program, I need some space in memory where I'm going to put some information. And there's also variable definition, where you tell it, okay, I have a piece of information, please put it in this area of memory. And you can either do them separately or you can do them at the same time. In fact, if you look at the short section on scalars, the first line of example code is an example of a declaration and definition on the same line. So you're telling the program, I want to create a variable called myScalar, and you're giving it the value of 5. Now, moving on again to the note sheet. Perl has three basic types of variables, and they're used to store and work with different kinds of information. The simplest type is just the single piece of data, as we just saw in the example, and that in Perl at least they're called scalars. Is there any questions about the example at all? No. It does what it says. It creates a variable, assigns a value 5 to it, and prints it out.
Pardon?
Pardon?
What's the significance of the dollar sign?
Significance of the dollar sign is, as we move forward and talk about the three different types of variables, the dollar sign before the name of the variable tells the Perl interpreter what kind of variable it is. So in this case, the dollar sign means it's a scalar. And you see when we talk about arrays and hashes that they're preceded by different symbols just to tell it that it's a different type of variable. So we've covered the example. Got in my notes here that it's a good time to mention, if particularly if any of you have worked with other languages like C or Java or C++, where it's always necessary to tell the compiler what kind of information you're going to be putting in this variable. It's not necessary to do that in Perl. Scalars can store integers, floating point numbers, i.e. numbers with decimal points in them. They can store strings, basically anything. Let's see. So, moving on, the next type of variable we're going to talk about is arrays. And arrays are basically lists of scalars. Now, why would we want to store a list of information? Can anyone come up with an example? So someone said to sort.
To sort it, to manipulate it for later use, to keep it around.
Yeah. Or just in general, a lot of the time we work with lists. In fact, most programs deal with some kinds of lists. You may just want to display the list. You may want to do something with it. A couple of examples I have, it could be points on a 2 or 3D graph. Could be search engine search results. Could be a shopping list. So again, arrays are lists of scalars. They're lists of simple values. And in Perl, arrays are zero indexed. When dealing with lists, or rather, when writing programs and dealing with lists, it's always necessary, either when you're going to put information into the list or take it out, to be able to say, well, which element in the list do I want to work with? And with arrays, typically in just about any language I've seen, you use numbers. You say, well, I want to put data in or get data out of the third element in the array. So in Perl, like in many other languages, the first element in the array is number zero. That's just, you need to know that just to avoid confusion when you start writing programs. If you start at one, you'll be missing a piece of information.
If you try and read an element outside of what you've put into the array, does it just pull something in that location from memory? Or does it give you an error in the error when you're trying to execute it, or what? I mean, if you've got an array with three elements and you try and read element 8, what's going to happen?
You don't.
I'm asking you theoretical questions.
I'm actually not sure in Perl.
I've done that enough in other languages.
Well, see, some languages will protect against it, and they won't allow you to do it. Perl, what I can say about Perl is that it's not a language where you have to tell it how many elements you want when you first create the array.
Yeah, that's what I was asking that.
I believe it's just a null value that results if you do something like that. I'm not
could
totally
be.
Sure.
Could be. That would make sense. I've never tried it.
Knowing the results of that would help in a troubleshooting process. If I'm getting some whacked out result, or if I'm getting null as my value that I'm returning, it might, hey, well, I read beyond my array, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I was getting at.
Yeah. There's someone back there.
If you pull an array value that hasn't been declared, you get undefined, which if you try to print it, will be blank. If you try to perform an operation on it, we'll get a warning. But it's not too strict about it.
There you go. Okay, so taking a very brief look at the example, again, as the gentleman in the back mentioned before, the way that you specify to the Perl interpreter that this is an array, you use an at sign followed by the name of the array. And there are various different ways to put elements into an array. Again, I did the declaration of the array and the definition on the same line. It was sort of the easy space-saving way for me to do it, yes.
Once you've declared an array, can you keep adding elements to that array?
Yeah. Yeah, and as I said, in Perl, it doesn't require you to tell it how big it is, and it doesn't require you to resize it. If you need a bigger one, just keep putting things into it.
Is there a limit on the size of the array?
Not that I've encountered so far. I'm sure there is. At some point, something's going to break, but it can get fairly big.
Once you've got your array, how do you deallocate the memory for it?
I don't do any allocation or deallocation in Perl.
So you don't have to use nos and deletes like in C++?
I don't think so. We could ask our resident expert.
For an array, say you have an array of 3 items, and you declare array number 8. It'll automatically size the array to 8 and allocate how much memory. If you set 8 to null, it'll resize it back to 3. So dynamic memory allocation.
Does Perl support multi-dimensional arrays?
I believe so, yeah.
All right. What would be the format for a multi-dimensional? Just a 2x2 or something.
I'm not sure. Have you ever had to use...
Mm-hmm. Instead of making an array of scalars, you do an array of arrays.
Okay.
And then you would call the multi-dimensionality the same way with C. Array, like bracket, bracket.
What about more than 2 dimensions?
Arrays of arrays of arrays.
Okay.
They're fixing it in Perl 6, so it's easier.
Okay. Do you want to come up here? No, really. Okay, so we just... Back to arrays, we have an example. Putting some strings into the array and, again, printing the first element in the array. Next basic piece of data is hashes, also known as associative arrays. With the explanation, hopefully that'll become clear why they're called associative arrays. Whereas arrays are basically lists that use numbers, to refer to each of the elements, hashes use strings. It's basically a two-column list, if you will, a key and a value. So each key maps to the corresponding value. Why would you want this kind of list? In the work that I do, at least, it's often necessary to identify things, whether they be individual pieces of data in the list, or it could be objects that contain lots of other data that are being stored in this list. It's often necessary to refer to them with something other than just a number that begins at 0. It could be, say, if it's a list of bank accounts, you'd want to have a list of bank accounts with bank account numbers as the keys. And that's, I think it sort of becomes clearer than the name associative arrays. It's an array of values associated with a list of keys. And the example again on the sheet, hashes are declared using the percent sign before the name of the hash. And you can see that unlike with arrays where you're putting values into them, it's just a list where you're putting a list of values into the array. With hashes, you're putting a key and the corresponding value, followed by the next key and the corresponding value. Yes.
These hashes, I assume you perform operations on the key, and it changes the value associated with it. Like a normal array, you can scale this as big as you need to dynamically, right?
Yes.
Can you rename keys or redefine keys later on, or do the keys have to have any type of relationship to each other?
The keys need to be unique.
Okay.
So if you have an existing key and you say, well, I want to put a new piece of data using the same key into the hash, what it'll do is it'll find the existing piece of data that's associated with the key, and it'll overwrite it.
Okay.
In the example here, it looks like both your key and your values are strings.
Yeah.
Can that be different?
It can, yeah.
If you use numbers, it will treat them as numbers, or will it treat them as a string of
numbers? No, I believe it'll treat them as numbers. It'll intelligently figure out that it's a number.
There isn't much of a need for distinction, because there are certain operators that are specific to strings and certain for integers, and it'll dynamically switch back and forth depending on what you call.
Is there any other questions? Okay, so on to the next basic concept. We've covered storing data inside a program. Next basic concept, or actually the next two basic concepts, deal with then doing something useful with the data. We've now got this information. We've either read it in from the command line, the user's entered it, it's coming in from a file, wherever. Now we want to do something useful with it. We want to sort it. We want to create a report based on the contents of the data, so on. So the next concept is loops, or repeating yourselves, or yourself, doing things over and over again. Why would we want to do this? Very frequently there's a need to manipulate lots of data. It could be lines from a file. It could be lists. So if you have an array or a hash, you might want to go through the entire array or hash and do something with the information in that array or hash. And as we talked about earlier, that's one of the things that computers are really good at doing. They're good at repetition. They're good at doing things over and over accurately. So there's a couple of different situations or a couple of different ways that you might want to go through a lot of data. Again, in the example sheet, I talk about, well, there's an example that covers just one way of looping through information. There's some other ways listed underneath. There's no syntax example, but there are other ways of doing it. The example is basically a for loop. If anyone has done any programming whatsoever, you're probably familiar with this idea or construct. The for loop is just basically a way to repeat something a fixed number of times. You can either explicitly tell it how many times you want to repeat something, or you can tell it, go look at an array and tell me how many elements are in that array and repeat whatever it is you need to repeat that many number of times. The example code just repeats this print action, or this print
functionality, if you will, 10 times. The way the for loop is structured is the first thing you need to tell the for loop is where to begin. In this case, you're telling it begin at number one. The second thing you need to tell it is where to stop. In this case, anything, well, rather, continue if $i, which, by the way, is a scalar, is less than 10. And the third thing you need to tell it is move forward. So basically what's happening is a counter called $i is being initialized with a value 1. The loop knows that it needs to continue as long as I is less than 10. And then at the end, it's being told, when you're done with what you're doing, add 1 to I. And so it's going to keep counting up. It's a bit of an obsessive compulsive loop. It doesn't really do anything useful. It just prints over and over. Other kinds of loops, while, until, do while, do until, and for each. I will let people research that. It's just there's plenty of information out there. You got anything to add?
Just for each loop is particularly useful for arrays, because if you've programmed in C or Java, I think, you have to specify from 1 until a certain index to get through an entire array. In Perl, you just do for each item in the array, iterate through. So it's much more convenient. You don't have to know what you're doing. Always a plus. I certainly don't.
Okay, so that covers repeating yourself, loops. The final basic concept is making decisions based on the different values of data. Again, why would we want to make decisions based on particular values of data? I think that's fairly obvious to me, but you obviously want programs to behave differently depending on what comes in, depending on the conditions under which the program is run. So, let's see. We therefore have a program that needs to process data, needs to do something useful with data. If we look at the example, there's much fewer, I would say, ways of making decisions in Perl and probably just about any other language than there is of looping and repeating things. The example code uses an if statement. And in Perl, like just about any other language, you can say, if some condition is true, do something. And you can have a long list of these. Or it can just be a simple if statement. Basically, the core thing to understand is you're making a decision based on the value of some information in the program.
Does Perl support anything like a case statement from C or Pascal?
No, it's if, else if, else if, else if.
Oh, okay.
Nothing's, so you can fake it, but...
It's no case.
I got you.
You can also use OR as a logical operator. By doing expression OR expression, if the first one doesn't evaluate to true, it'll default to the next one, just as a shortcut. And can I see the paper for a minute?
This one?
Yeah. I think there's a typo on line 3 of the if statement, just in case you go home and try this. It's instead of ELSEIF, it's Perl wants ELSIF. Just common typo. Annoying, but it's there. If you're converting from C or Java.
Let's see.
It should read ELSIF instead of ELSEIF.
I'm jumping ahead a little to the comments that start with the pound signs. Can you do a comment in the second half of a line like you can with the other languages?
There's a syntax for delimiting a section of the text for comments or plain old documentation. But the pound sign is the common one, and no, it can't run over to the next line.
But you can, yeah, you can put it, pound is comment from there until the end of the line. So wherever you put it, doesn't matter.
The comment will run from the pound sign until you hit a carriage return, and then it'll be back to you.
Okay, so that covers making decisions. Is there any questions about any of the basic concepts? It's really easy stuff. I don't. Okay, so basically, in conclusion, looking back at what we've talked about, when you start to write programs, essentially these are the basic building blocks that you put together. You start combining them and putting them together in different ways. The application I work on at work is, I don't know how many thousands or millions or billions of lines of code it is, but if you look at the code, the basic constituents, the basic building blocks are the three that we've just talked about, plus some others, but the building blocks are those. Say something?
I just want to say that Perl is probably the most versatile of any other language out there, except possibly Python, which is the same thing, only with white space instead of brackets. You can use it from text processing, shell programming, to 3D graphics and application programming. You can do anything with the pre-built modules from CPAN, which is the comprehensive Perl archive network, where if you need Perl to do something, it's there. I think that's listed on the bottom of the page under resources.
Yeah, he basically covered just about everything else I was going to say. Thank you. But as I said earlier, Perl does support object-oriented programming, if that's the direction you're interested in going in. Another really powerful feature that it supports natively. I know lots of other languages are trying to build it in, or they have extensions to do this. Perl supports regular expressions, which is a really, really good and fast and powerful way to look for and manipulate text. That's actually one of the original things that Perl was designed for. Perl stands for Practical Extraction and Reporting Language. Some people say, pathologically eclectic rubbish lister. But it was initially designed and is very good at going through lots of text. That's mainly what I use it for at work, going through lots of text, extracting information, moving things around and such. So you had a question?
Yeah, you gave us a lot of good resources at the end. I just wondered if your cohort wanted to add some resources to that.
Well, what's there? If you want to use Perl for web programming, for which it is very powerful, webmonkey.com is a great resource, not just for Perl, but for a lot of other things.
Good one.
And perlmonks.org is also very good.
Is that not there?
It's there. No. And PerlDoc is all the documentation you will pretty much ever need, and CPAN for modules.
Yeah, Perl Monks has some really good tutorials.
Thanks.
They're not too long. I stole all the code off the tutorials for that. And they're really good, yeah.
I came in a little bit late. You may have mentioned at the beginning, does Perl support, does it have compiler support? You can actually make executables out of it, or is it pure scripting?
I've never seen one before. I don't know if...
With .NET? And the Unix equivalent Mono, Perl should be integrated into the common language interface. So compilable Perl is around the corner.
Okay. Cool.
They say.
And
if you're using the modules, do you have to worry about, if you're serving up a web page, do you have to worry about whether the people on the other end have the
same?
No,
just server side.
Okay.
Does Perl support inheritance?
Yeah. Perl has full object-oriented support.
Does it have multiple inheritance support?
Multiple inheritance, okay. Too.
If you're doing a program for a website, does the module have to reside on the server or can it reside in your actual CGI bin directory? Or does it have to reside?
Well, the program presumably is going to be running on a server?
Yeah, it's going to be running off a CGI bin directory off of a web server that somewhere in this country somewhere.
Yeah, as far as I know, yes. You do
you have to declare where it's sitting at the top of the program?
There are basically two kinds of includes. One are Perl packages and modules, which do have to be installed and compiled on the server. But you can also use sort of like macros in C, pound include whatever.h. You can include external Perl files, and those can be anywhere you need.
Oh, but so if I wanted to get a specific module for Perl and it's not supported under, it's not compiled on the server that I'm using, I have to ask them to compile it.
Basically, if the module... A lot of the modules are programmed in C to use functionality of the machine. And if it needs C, then it has to be installed on the server. If it's just a straight Perl program or script with Perl functions that you're going to use, it can be anywhere.
Okay.
So there you go, distributed computing. That's just about all I have. Just some final words is... you know, be curious. Go out, download this stuff. Be a hacker. Go play with it.
I have to ask, what is chomp? In your example,
chomp removes the new line character.
Yes.
When you enter text and hit enter, the enter is passed through, and chomp removes the new line from the end.
Does chomp remove the last character or just or a new line? Does it recognize
chomp
if it's a...
Chomp removes new line. Chop removes the last.
Okay.
So. That's it. Thanks very much to everyone.
Sorry to steal your thunder.
Oh, that's all right.
What was the site you said? WebMonkey?
WebMonkey.com.